hello again. This is Watch the Media. I'm John Schrader. When we need to understand what's going on in sports economics, we call on David Barry, the author of plenty of books and articles on sports and economics. David is a professor of economics at Southern Utah University. This time around, what's on my mind is the college sports industry. I don't know where to start. Jimbo Fisher, $78 million. Why don't we start there? Let's put that in the big picture. It seems crazy, and it is crazy, but in the big picture, what does it mean when a university says, don't work for us any longer, and here's the $78 million we owe you?
Well, it means that they clearly made some bad decisions. So obviously that's true. I thought what was interesting about the episode is the athletic director who made the bad decisions. Doesn't seem to think this was a bad decision per se, or that there was something wrong with his thought process. And B is completely confident. You can see this in the comments he made, completely confident in his ability to pick the right person now. It's like, but you already tried to pick the right person and you didn't come close. So how can you make a $78 million mistake and yet have your confidence completely unshaken by that? That is remarkable to me. It seems to me that if you fail spectacularly in life, there should be at least a moment of introspection where you think, hey, maybe I don't know what I'm doing. That could be, maybe that's the explanation of what's going on here. But no, totally confident. I know what I'm doing. And there was nobody like in the press conference going, clearly you're an idiot and you just wasted $7, $8 million. Now, we should note Texas A&M's budget is $7.5 billion per year. So for the university, not a terrifically meaningful sum of money. They have money. I don't think people get that about college sports. I think we think it's a big business, but for universities, it's a tiny business. Even at Nebraska, Nebraska football is not a very big part of the University of Nebraska's budget. It's a very tiny part of the business. I think one of the things that troubles me about universities, and this is about the Jimbo Fisher thing too, is that the Board of Regents at Texas A&M spent 4 hours discussing this on, they said that we spent 4 hours on Thursday night making this one decision. How can you spend 4 hours on a program that is this small at your university? I have this question with Board of Regents. I want you to tell me a member of every department on your campus, just one member. I don't need you to know the whole department, but tell me some faculty member in chemistry. Tell me a faculty member that's in communications. Tell me a faculty member that's in political science. Just a faculty member. Do you know anybody who works here who's generating the $7.5 billion that you have every year? Because they're the ones that matter. Not the football team. The football team doesn't really mean anything to you. Why are you focusing on this? If it was a, you know, because clearly if you break up the, you know, the units, there have got to be units on campus that are worth way more than the football program. Mm-hmm. Would you spend 4 hours debating whether you should fire a dean?
Yeah. No. So if the athletic director hires Fisher and then fires him, and now his job is to hire the next guy at whatever price. And if Fisher wasn't good enough, they're going to have to spend more money to get an Urban Meyer or steal somebody away from someplace else. If the provost, if the economics professor, if the journalism professor, if the deans had failed so spectacularly, would they still be around to have the opportunity to make that next decision?
No, I would think that at that point, everyone gets fired, right?
Yeah,
you just made
think.
A spectacularly bad decision. This is not working. You promised us something. It didn't happen. If you think that we have to go in a different direction, we have to go in a different direction from you. You're the one who chose this direction. You said this guy could do this. You were wrong. Why would we think that you could pick the next one? That's utterly ridiculous. And yet they did. And then the other thing about that decision, there's another part of that story, is that Texas A&M won the game this weekend, 51-10. The other team, Mississippi State, they also spent $4 million to fire their coach after that game, which means while that football game was being played, two sets of decision makers are watching the same game and concluding we should fire our coach. How do you both think that?
They just won by 41 points and they won their sixth game of the year. but we're going to get rid of this guy.
These
are the things that I don't understand.
Why are we doing that? What is wrong with this process? What are you thinking here? And it's utterly ridiculous to think. And University of Nebraska has faced the same situation, right? Because Nebraska used to have a football program that was the football program in the country.
Right.
And then through a series of decisions, they totally destroyed it, right? Correct. Because it no longer I think University of Nebraska today, in terms of football, is essentially, how would we think of this? Kind of like, I don't know, Oklahoma State was when, like, 30 years ago, you know, a team that every once in a while won some games, but typically didn't.
Yeah, no. And there are people in Nebraska who are going to hear you say that. And they're going to say, well, didn't you live in Nebraska when you were younger?
I did. I lived in Nebraska when they were good. When they were good, I was there.
You know this.
I know that. And I can remember Nebraska playing Oklahoma State. And I remember how that went. And it usually was Nebraska wins by 5 touchdowns.
Yeah.
And Oklahoma State was a team that was like, well, when they get Barry Sanders, they win like 8 or 9 games. But typically they're not great. And nobody expected Oklahoma State to be great. Nobody thought they were in any kind of conversation to be national title holders. Nobody thought that. They were just a middling college football program. And that's all they ever were. And Nebraska's become that. Now, how did Nebraska get to that point? Well, they had Tom Osborne. Then Tom Osborne gave the job to Solich. Solich won 9 games. That was good. Some athletic director goes, enough. No. We must contend for national championships every single year. I'm going to fire the coach that's successful and bring in this new guy who completely wrecks the program. That was the guy that used to coach for the Raiders, right?
The Bill Callahan. Yeah, now you're up the tree here.
He wrecks the program. They bring back Tom Osborne. Yeah. He fires Callahan in 10 minutes, brings in another guy who's Tom Osborne's guy, Bo Pelini, right? Bo Pelini gets them back to 9 wins. They're happy. We're at 9 wins. This is good. Then a new athletic director comes and goes, no, we must contend for national championships. Fires the 9-win guy, brings in the guy who can't win more than 5 or 6 games. He wrecks the program. And then they go to Scott Frost. It's like, well, at this point now, you've wrecked the program so much, you can't recruit anymore. Nobody wants to come to your program because you've now completely transformed your reputation. And this is the thing about college football and college sports in general. This is true for all college programs. The high school athletes pick their programs based on who's likely to win. If you have a lot of seasons where you don't win, you will no longer be able to recruit the elite athletes anymore. And the thing is that when you look at the recruiting charts they come out with every year, and they do this every year, you'll see at the top, Alabama, you'll see these top programs, Michigan, they're at the top 5, right? And then you'll see a program like Nebraska. Where are they ranked? 25th. 30th. Okay, well, I'm telling you that if that's where your recruiting is ranked, then you can expect that you're probably not going to be ranked in the top 10. Your recruits are 30th ranked. Mm-hmm. You're going to be a 30th ranked program, and you're probably going to win 7 games. And that's life, because that's the talent you got. They have much better talent. You have much worse talent. And that's how football works. College football, the difference in talent is so incredibly huge between the top programs and the lesser programs, that there's no coaching that's going to fix that. I'm sorry, that wide receiver runs a 4.440 and my defensive back runs a 4.740. I have no way of coaching this.
I mean,
he's going to be open. I'm sorry, I can't make him be faster.
Yeah, the team with the better players usually wins.
That's how it works. And that's how this works over and over again. And if you've wrecked your program because you insisted on getting rid of the 9-win guy, and we're both old enough to remember that Tom Osborne was the 9-win guy for a long, long time. He didn't win anything. He was always just the 9-win guy. And then at the end of his career, he put together some teams that got 2 extra wins, and he became the legend. But I remember growing up, when I was living in Nebraska as a kid, every year, 9 wins, 9 wins, lose to Oklahoma, 9 wins, 9 wins. And it's like, and people were pissed off about that. It's like, okay, well, you know, that's pretty good. Better than 2 wins.
Yeah, when I was here in the 70s, they beat 9 other teams every year and lost to Oklahoma every year. So, I mean, that's the way it was.
Yeah, and that's the way life was, and that's okay, and that's not a bad outcome. That's better than Kansas State.
Yeah. So let me try to again understand this then. So 78 million out of 7.5 would you say 6 billion, something like that, 7.5 billion. I'm not a mathematician, but I know that's not even 1/10. It's not even 1/100. It's not a lot, but it is. It's crazy. It is crazy. Do these athletic departments need better finance directors, better economists, better oversight? I mean, if a board of regents isn't going to hold somebody accountable for spending $78 million to tell the guy to go away and don't work for us any longer, who is going to hold them accountable?
Well, it should be noted that a lot of this money is being raised from boosters. And I think that's another issue we should ask about. We should ask that question about college sports as well. College sports have a very bizarre financing model. So if you and I were to go start a business, so let's say you and I, we start a Taco Bell, we would then get a building and then we would hire workers and we would pay the workers and the workers would generate revenue. And then we would collect some of that revenue and use some of that to pay the, and it's all, we are the ones who make the decision. College sports does it this way. We go to these other people who are not employees of the university and are not entitled to any of our revenue. So we sell tickets to these games. We get broadcasting deals. We have all this revenue coming in. The people who donate money to us get no claims to that. We're not going to give them any of that. And they're going to pay our workers and they're going to pay our coaches and they're going to give us money. And you're like, why would it? And the thing is that you have to imagine that all of these boosters have the same attitude the athletic director has. Their attitude is, I'm a smart businessman because I got millions of dollars. I'm sorry, smart businessman. You're spending millions of dollars on something that you have no claim to. Why are you doing that? That's a stupid way of spending your money. What are you getting out of this? Well, what I get out of it is I get to see my football team win. Okay, that's really ridiculous. Why don't you just pick a different football team? Wouldn't that be a lot cheaper? So, you know, it's just a very weird way of, why are you spending your money on this? How smart are you that you spend millions of dollars to fire a football coach and they actually came to you and you gave it to them right away? Didn't seem to ask any questions.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, you hired the last guy and blew it. So here it is again. And an extension of that, David, is that the NIL kind of works that way too, right? Let's go to Taco Bell. David, you want a Taco Bell now? Can you give us a $10,000 or $100,000 so we can get a better volleyball player, and you just give it to them and give it to the athlete, but they still have no say in anything, right?
We're going to sell lots of tickets for this volleyball player. Great. And we're going to make a lot of money. Great. You don't get any of it. Who has a business plan like that? You can't raise money. You could not raise money in the corporate world where you said, please give money to Microsoft, but we're not going to give you any money back. You're just donating it to us.
That's ridiculous. I've asked you this before, and I'm going to ask you again as directly as I can. Is this sustainable?
Yes, forever, because it's been going on forever.
I mean, the NIL particularly.
This gets at the core issue in sports, which makes sports totally different from every other business, is that the customer, which is ultimately the boosters, are emotionally addicted to the outcome. So this is not like a Taco Bell. So if you go to a Taco Bell, you go to a restaurant, and you may love that restaurant. You may have been going to that restaurant every week forever, but you go one time and you get a meal and it's awful. You're done. That's the end of that. I ain't going there no more, right? Restaurants got to hit it every single time. That's why restaurants are terribly stressful. You got to hit it every single time. You piss off the customer once, they're never coming back, and they're going to tell everybody else they're not going to come back, or you're going to kill my business. But in sports, you can lose year after year after year, and the fans never go away because they're emotionally addicted to this, and they're willing to do anything to make you win, including give money to your program when they get no return on that. And they're willing to do that. And you're like, why would you do that? Because for them, when Texas A&M loses, it feels so bad. They are so sad when that happens. They're willing to spend millions of dollars to avoid that feeling. And you're like, that's insane. Why would you feel that way about this? And that is the thing about sports. Sports have this very odd, addictive, and it's the same thing. I would argue it's probably very similar. And I would love to have a neuroscientist study this and tell me if this is true or not. But it feels to me like sports and politics and religion are all kind of the same thing in your brain. You're so addicted to something that has nothing, that is totally outside you, right? It's not you. And it's driving all of your decision making. And it is the case that when a sports team wins, the fans have this weird thing. We won. We didn't do anything. You don't play. Yeah. You're not in this. Yeah. Okay. My wife and I played pickleball today. One of us won, one of us lost, my wife won. So my wife won, I lost. We were the only ones involved in that. If somebody was watching us, you didn't do anything. We were the only ones playing. Yeah. And that's what's bizarre about sports, is that not only does a fan think they won, they think they lost. And when they lose, they feel bad. And they're willing to spend money to avoid this feeling. And colleges take advantage of this.
Yes.
They take advantage of that feeling to get people to donate them money. Because what effectively they're telling them is, if you give us money, we'll hire better players, we'll hire better coaches, and we'll make you feel better. That's the deal they're making. And it's so utterly bizarre.
Let's put up a $150 million building. Oh, let me just pull that number out of the hat, because we did that here in the last 2 years. So let's put a new building in there. That'll get better players. Well, it hasn't worked so far, right? So we're going to now spend $400 to $500 million renovating the stadium. That'll make us a better product. Where's that money coming from? Who really knows for sure? But for me, it's like your economics department, your engineering department, your colleges, your scientists who are making better agriculture, right? Those are the people who are making a longer term difference at the university, right? They're the ones who are making a difference in our lives, really, right?
Well, maybe not the economists, but everyone else probably.
Okay, maybe not the journalism, but the journalism college certainly is. Now, these
certainly,
people are,
certainly journalism is. We're absolutely not so sure about the economists.
Absolutely.
But other people certainly are doing something useful.
But so we're scraping.
That. But the thing
point is
that there's no emotional attachment to that, right?
Right
you
right.
announce a new, if you write a new chemistry paper, nobody sits there and goes, "We wrote a chemistry paper. We didn't do anything."
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
But so that's the emotional part of it. But really what we're doing on this campus is so much that could use $78 million to make more people's lives better. But instead we tread on that emotional thing to make your life better as a Nebraska football fan and not necessarily as a person who needs a heart transplant 10 years down the road.
And it gets back at how does the university president spend their day and what kind of conversations do they have? And I would be willing to bet that the university president spends far more time talking about the sports program than they ever spend any time talking about anything else. That a legislator that they're going to and trying to get funding from is not interested in what the chemistry department just did.
Yeah.
What they're interested in is, did the football team win or not? Or did the volleyball team win or not? Or what's going on with the sports? Because that's what I'm watching. And so therefore, the Board of Regents Texas A&M spends 4 hours debating about the football coach because the legislators that they're talking to are interested in that. And they're not interested in the other things that they should be talking about. And since that's the world they live in, that's what they focus on, which is ridiculous, right? That's crazy. Why would you do that? But that's the problem, is that the people who are making the decisions, that's what they're interested in. And if you were to ask the Board of Regents or the legislators, tell me who exactly is working at these universities and what specifically are they doing? And we try to show the, I will say this, I love, there is one particular network, and I think it's the SEC network that does this, the best job of this. So, you know, all the different major conferences have their own television stations. The SEC, I think, is the one that, or maybe it's the University of Texas one that does this. They do a really good job of spotlighting researchers and people who are doing things on their campuses. And I'm like, that's a really good thing to do. Hey, we have people doing stuff and you should be interested in this because that's what our business is. And it's really nice to see that rather than having them spend all their time talking about what the sports teams are doing, because sports teams, really the job of the sports team is simply to advertise the university, to let you know that it's there.
Right.
But it's not the purpose of the university. And I teach at a university in Bangkok every Thursday night. I have this conversation with them because no universities around the world even have these things. They don't have sports programs. So I have to explain to these students that in the US we do this. And I, one of the ways I illustrate this is I tell them, I said, since I'm teaching at this university, I said, you know, it'd be kind of cool, because we all do this in America. I'd love to have a sweatshirt for the school. Can I get a sweatshirt? They don't have sweatshirts. If you look at their bookstore website, what they have are books. We sell books at our bookstore. It's called a bookstore. We sell books. And then I tell my students, and this is weird about my school, Southern Utah University. I've had our bookstore is on two levels. On the top level, when you walk in, is all the sweatshirts, all the memorabilia, all that stuff. The books are in the basement. And I had a student tell me that when they got here as an 18-year-old first-year student, they couldn't find the books because the staircase is in the back of the first floor. And if you don't know it's there, you can't find it. So he said, I went to the bookstore to buy my books and I walked all around and I never saw any books. I was so embarrassed. I just went home and ordered them online because I didn't know where to, how to get the books. And he said, eventually somebody told me there's a secret staircase. You got to go down the staircase. Tell my students, Bangkok, our books are hidden. You have to know where they are to get to them because our bookstore primarily sells you sweatshirts.
Okay. One final economics question. Okay. The University of Nebraska just signed their athletic director to a new 8-year contract, more than doubling his salary, and could be closer to tripling his salary by the time it's over. Why does anybody in an athletic department need an 8-year contract?
Yeah, that's a good damn question. And I'm sure it's, I am sure it's guaranteed. That's Trev Alberts, right? See, I think this is a case where Nebraska is tremendously exaggerating the value of Trev Alberts, because Trev Alberts has a lot of value to Nebraska because he played at Nebraska. Mm-hmm. But what value does he have at any other program? Is there some other program going, I need Trev Alberts?
Yeah.
I mean, Trev Alberts has a lot of pull and influence because he was a star player on the Nebraska football team. But none of that pull or influence would matter at Kansas State.
Right, right.
They're not going to get excited about that.
Woo-hoo,
so
Trev Alberts.
Who are you competing against when you're making this contract? Yeah.
And the other thing about it, too, is that it's the president who's leaving to go to Ohio State. Ted Carter's leaving, starting at Ohio State on January 1st. Who gives Trev Alberts the eight year contract extension for gobs of money? I'm always, a guy told me this years ago, always be leery about the guy who's giving out big money on his way out the door, because you got to be worried about that. But that seems a little odd to me as well.
Oh, it's all very weird. It's the economics of these. I think one of the things that you find out when you study this stuff is that I think this is true of faculty as well. Faculty do not have any idea how big the operations are. And so it's amazing how often you can go to faculty and say, I don't have $10,000 for what you want to do. And then you look and you go, but your budget's $7.5 billion. What do you mean you don't have $10,000? Of course you have $10,000. And I always tell faculty, because I've been on our faculty senate here and I chair my department here, is I always tell faculty that when administrators tell you that they don't have the money, what they're really telling you is, I don't want to spend the money on you. It's not that I don't have the money to spend on you. I don't want to. And that's it. That's my explanation. I don't want to. And you may think I should want to, but I don't want to. Why are you giving Trev Alberts eight? Because I like Trev Alberts and I want to give him money. And you're like, okay, is it because he's such a great athletic director? How would you even measure
that? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Who are you competing against? Who's out there hiring?
Unless he's the guy who's out there rounding up that $200 million you need, and maybe that's what it's all about.
Yeah, that's how they're making decisions. It's not based on, they're not doing some kind of complex analysis where they're doing some kind of economic analysis and saying, yeah, okay, this is what makes the most economic sense. What they're doing is, well, I like this guy. Yeah. A lot of decisions are made just based on that. Well, I like this person. I don't like that person. And you're like, well, that's a silly way of making decisions.
And that's why they make us do all this research, and we have to have CVs that are 1,000 miles long, and we have to prove our existence regularly, right?
That's a whole nother podcast we could do, is how much academics have been scammed into doing things that are totally pointless. We as academics spend an awful lot of our time trying to impress people who are never going to be impressed by us.
I'm going to end it right there. That's where the conversation ends right there.
I think that's the story of academia. I wrote this article. Are you impressed? I will never be impressed by anything you ever do in your life. Quit trying to impress me.
But 37 people read it. Come on.
Come on. This is, it's like, even the Nobel Prize winners, nobody knows who the hell these people are. I want a Nobel Prize. You're still going to have to pay for your Taco Bell. I don't really care.
All right, back to Taco Bell. That's it. We've talked about Taco Bell.
I brought that full circle. See?
There you go. You're the man. Hey, thanks, David. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Get back to work running that department, okay?
Yeah.
David Barry, economist in sports and other things, and the chair of his department at Southern Utah University. I'm John Schrader.